This week's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype.
Welcome to Book Hype, Lucky 13. I'm Marima, and I have Karen and Mikhail with me here today. Yay!
Hello!
Oh, jinx.
No, I was.
I don't know how we solve this problem if on a podcast.
How do you solve it?
Oh, you just did it again. So good. All right, let's keep going. Yay, book hype. We are Hyperbole's book podcast. We talk about all kinds of things and not just how to solve jinx issues. If you want to get in touch with us, we are twitter.com/bookhype, and you can find us on Hyperbole, hyperbole.com. Let's jump right in today. What are we reading this week? Karen, are you reading anything fun?
I just finished The Cuckoo's Calling 45 minutes ago.
Oh, fancy that.
That's the one I just finished, but I am going to be reading Fire with Fire, which is the second Burn by Burn novel, which I have to have a review up by Tuesday. So,
oh,
lots of
pressure
reading this weekend.
Fun. Mikhail, what about you?
I'm reading The Bitter Kingdom by Ray Carson, which I mentioned last week. I'm really enjoying it. I should have a review up, but my schedule is literally insane. So that's going to happen when I finish. And hopefully next time I will be reading The Republic of Thieves by Scott Lynch, because I've had the ARC since Comic-Con, and I have not had a chance to read it yet, and I literally am, like, so excited to read this book. And, like, I don't care what else I have to read. That book is next. It is next. So hopefully next week, that is what I'll be reading.
I've just started watching Parks and Rec, and so every time someone says literally, just, like, my head just goes insane. Do you guys watch that show?
No.
Oh, man, you're missing out. Okay, people that watch Parks and Rec would, like, totally get what I'm talking about, but I literally, like, every single time someone says that, just in my head. Anyway.
I didn't even know I said literally.
Yes, twice. I was counting. I know, we'll have to make a quota. What am I reading? Oh, this is relevant to book hype. Last week when we were talking about our books that we are excited for, I was talking about The 100 by Cass Morgan, and I read it this week. Yay, Marima! Own cheer squad. That's embarrassing. It was really good. It was fun. It's the one that there's like a TV show based off it. I don't know what network that is on. I'm like not up with, I don't know, American TV. Whatever. In Australia, we have like five
CW.
TV. It's CW. See, in Australia, we have like five TV channels. So,
wow.
Yeah. And they're all numbers.
So you just call them like Channel A, Channel B.
No, Channel 2, Channel 7, Channel 9, Channel... I'm not making this up. And that was really good. So I would definitely check out the TV series. I would recommend people read the book, but the way that it was written, it kind of reads like a TV show, if that makes sense. It was very cinematic. So that was cool. And I also just reread... Oh, I can't speak English. I also just read All the Truth That's in Me by Julie Berry, which is going to be out, I think it's September in America and October in Australia, which I've had the ARC for ages as well. And it's about this girl that like disappears from her hometown and comes back all like mutilated and half her tongue's been cut out. And it's like, drama, what happened? Except more subdued than that, because like it's not a Glee book. And yeah. Like that made it, it's not like that. It was really good. It was an interesting kind of read. I think I'm going to review it for Hyperbole. So you can, you know, watch out for that at some point. And yeah, that's fun.
I got some at BEA and it's been sitting on my shelf. I wasn't sure if I should read it, but maybe
All the Truth That's in Me. You got that one.
Mm-hmm.
The girls at, now let me think. Who's publishing it in Australia? It must be Random House. They have been like going crazy about it over here. And oh, who does publish it? Now I need to check. No, HarperCollins. HarperCollins. In Australia, they've been going like crazy about it. It's their like must read book of the year. And sometimes, you know, when they build them up like that, you get sort of disappointed because there's no way it can live up to the hype. But it was hype. But it was actually really good. I definitely recommend it. I haven't read anything quite like it, and in the writing style as well. So yeah, do add that onto your list of like 5,000 things you need to read.
Cool.
So, as Karen mentioned, we are going to be doing our Cuckoo's Calling review later in the episode. So that'll be fun. But first of all, Mikhail, I think you have a book bites for us.
Yes, today I'm going literal on book bites, and I want us to talk about food in books that we've read about that we really want to eat, or alternatively, really don't want to eat. That can be a thing too.
Oh, was that put in for me because of the conversation we had before? No, I feel
Well, you're
bad.
talking about Game of Thrones, and there's a ton of food in there that, like,
I don't want to eat, yeah.
definitely not. I'm not talking about chicken. I'm talking about like puppies. So.
Oh, I don't remember those
What?
bits. Maybe I think I just skip over the food scenes because, like, I just don't care.
I
Like, they
think
go
it
on
might have
for.
actually been in book five, the
Oh,
puppies.
well, I'm only up to three. Spoilers. Oh, you've ruined it all
They
for me.
eat puppies?
Yeah, that's. You've destroyed Karen's soul.
Well, they're not born yet, so, like, it's.
All right, so what books do have food that we actually want to eat?
Was funny. That was like, oh!
What? Anyone? Are there any books?
Harry
Okay, well.
Potter.
Yeah. What
There's some
food, though?
things in there. Like, I'd like to eat some of the candy. Not like the gross candy, but, you know, the good stuff.
Not the cockroach clusters, gross. Oh, you know which ones always creeped me out? The fudge flies. I don't know why. They just sounded the grossest. I think because I really like fudge and I was like, you're ruining such a good thing. I'm sure there are grosser things like that. There's like blood things, but I can't think of them right now. Yeah, that would be
Yeah.
cool. You know what had some? The Hunger Games. I would definitely want to
I
eat the
was just
Hunger
gonna
Games
say that.
food. Yeah, I want to
Do
go.
you remember her favorite dish? That one always sounded really
It
good,
was
but I don't
the
remember
beef
what it's called.
stew.
Oh, I thought it was more interesting than
No, it was
that.
like that beef stew. Because I was like, oh, gross. When I read, I'm vegetarian, I should probably preface this. Yeah, no, I want to do. Which one was it? It's in Catching Fire when they go to the Capitol and they're having like the big wedding party or whatever. And then they have like the 1,000 different like soups and cakes and all these things. And I was just like, man, I want to eat these cakes. So, yeah. That's
Yeah.
mine. Mikhail, you haven't actually said any that you would want to eat. Like, you don't want to eat
Well,
puppies, noted. What else?
one that I do want to eat is that, I think it's in the fourth book, Mrs. Weasley makes Harry and Ron dragon Easter eggs with like caramel inside.
Oh, yeah, that was fourth.
Yeah, and I read that book in camp. One unhappy summer in camp, and one morning I was really hungry and I hadn't had breakfast, and I literally had visions of those dancing in my head. Like, I'm not kidding, I was imagining eating them, and I was like doing something else, and in my head I was just eating this dragon egg. And yeah, it was kind of funny. But yeah, I totally hadn't thought of there being even food in the Hunger Games until you guys mentioned it. But that's kind of a highly ironic statement. The food in the Hunger Games.
Yeah, that's like wasn't I remember that being a thing when the Hunger Games came out that people were like, "Oh, is this like a book about people with eating disorders? Is this like an ironic title?" I was like, "Seriously? Like, look at it.
I didn't even hear that.
What do you think?" Doesn't matter.
I think I'd like to eat some of the food that's in the Percy Jackson series, like all the blue food that Percy's mom makes him. I think that could be fun.
What? Please
Yeah.
explain.
She always makes him
Blue?
tons of blue food. You haven't read Percy Jackson?
No.
Oh. I don't remember if it's just like his favorite color or something, but like she does it because it pisses off his stepfather. Like he really hates it, but it's like the one thing that she's really defiant about. So she always makes him like all of this blue food, like blue pancakes and just like everything's blue. It's kind of like a tradition. And so I think that would be really cool just to eat like blue food one day.
But
Yeah, Percy's mom is awesome.
I still don't get it. But yay, blue, cool.
It's
Like,
like this rebellion because like her husband is abusive, so like, and I think one day he was like Percy said something about wanting to eat blue food, and he was like, oh, there's no such thing as blue food, blah, blah, blah. So then from then on, she would, like, make Percy blue food, and it was, like, this bonding thing.
Okay.
It was very sweet, Marma.
Yes. I hope they're doing something else about that, like, abusive relationship, not just making blue food, though.
Oh, yeah, no, don't worry.
It's rectified.
Okay, I was gonna say, oh, if that's the only response to it, I'm not sure how much I would like these books.
No, it's treated with due gravity, I think.
Yeah, okay, cool. And then the blue food as well. Well, I mean, I'm not anti-blue food, except I really don't like blueberries. This has gone way off topic, so I think we should start talking about The Cuckoo's Calling. What do you guys think?
Yes, sure.
Yes,
while Karen still has it in her head, having finished it 45 minutes ago.
Yes.
That's very impressive. Before we keep going to our Cuckoo's Calling discussion, just like to remind you that today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of Book Hype, Audible is offering you a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their very helpful service. Today we are recommending The Girl of Fire and Thorns by Rae Carson, because Mikhail says it's awesome and the last book came out so you can read the whole trilogy at once. So you can check out the whole trilogy on Audible, and we thank them for their support of the show. Cuckoo's Calling! Woo! J.K. Rowling! Exciting! Exciting! No, are we not excited? Did anyone like this book?
I was waiting for you to break out into song. I didn't want to interrupt.
You should know that's just going to happen at some point, so we just roll with it. I read this book, like, right when it came out back in July, and I gave it...
Right
when she came out as the author, came out of the closet as the author. Snap! Oh,
she book. Came out of the cuckoo's closet.
Good one, I like it. And when I read it, I gave it, I believe it was a B+. So, what grade would you guys give it? I'm sticking with my grade. I'm sticking with my B+. So having finished it now, what do you guys think?
How does a B+ convert in our reading scale?
It's not an A+, and it's not an A. It's like a B+.
So would you buy it? Would you get it from the library, or would you have to get it for free to read it?
I would buy it, but it wasn't that good, so I'd probably be like reluctant to buy more. I'm asking the questions here. Grading. We're doing a grading today. That's what I've decided. Overall thoughts. What did we think?
I would give it a B, I think, just because this really isn't my usual genre. And I don't mind watching like TV shows and movies about like mysteries and crimes and stuff like that. But for a book, it just really kind of drags on. And, I mean, the writing was great, the characters were great, it's J.K. Rowling, so, I mean, I would definitely recommend people read it, but it just, you know, I'd rather read a fantasy book over something like this.
Yeah, my thoughts are very similar. I don't feel like, I mean, I feel like I'm glad I read it, but having read it, I don't know if, like, I was, like, if I needed to read it. Which is similar to how I felt about The Casual Vacancy, I think. But, yeah, I mean, I'd say buy it. You know, it's another sneaky J.K. Rowling book you can have on yourself. And I think it has the potential of, like, opening people up to a different genre. I'm not one of those people, but it might do that for some other readers.
Well, those were glowing reviews.
It's not that kind of book, I don't think. It didn't strike me as like a book that you rave about, you know, I mean.
Yeah, that's mainly my issue with it. Let's talk about some of the characters, because I think that, well, I definitely felt with Potter and even with Casual Vacancy. Have you both read The Casual Vacancy, by the way, while we're on the topic?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, cool. So I definitely felt with those and with Cuckoo's Calling as well that personally J.K. Rowling's strength to me in writing is her characters, and especially her minor characters, who are often hilarious. But let's talk a little bit about the main two. So we have Cormoran, I think that's how you say it. Cormoran, strike. We have strike, and we have robin. So, did we like them? Did we not like them? Is strike a good protagonist to head up a new series? What do we think?
I like Strike because he's kind of gruff and not, this dashing private detective who gets all the girls and is super suave and stuff. He's got a really interesting past and sort of an interesting personality. I wasn't really expecting to like him, mostly because of his first encounter with Robin and sort of what we knew, the very little that we knew about him and Charlotte and their kind of, crazy relationship and how that all ended. But I ended up liking him quite a bit. And yeah, like I said, he wasn't perfect, and I think that was really refreshing compared to 007 characters that tend to get everything that they want and are these super handsome guys that solve all the crimes.
Yeah, true. Mikhail?
I felt very differently about both of them at different points in the book. There were points when I was really like, ugh, Cormoran Strike, you make me a little nauseous. And then there were points when I was really rooting for him. Overall, I found him more and more enjoyable as I read the book. I did think he was a little bit like Cormoran Strike, hard-bitten detective, and that was like I don't know, a little off-putting for me. Robin was interesting. I think she was different from what I expected, and at the same time, she wasn't like. She pulled out these flashes of nastiness that kind of surprised me. Like when she was like calling her friends to tell them that she was engaged, and like she was listening to their voices, and some of them, there's a line like it gave her equal pleasure to hear like the ones who were squealing for her and the ones who were clearly jealous. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. But yeah, I did find myself rooting for them. Overall through the book. So I think that was a good thing. And at points I was really like, oh, I really want Robin to stay and be his secretary. So yeah,
Oh, I
I
wanted
did
Robin
get
to go. I hate Robin. Robin sucks.
really?
Yeah. Oh, Robin is so bad. Strike, I can get behind. I definitely agree with you, Karen. He's like an interesting protagonist because in some ways he's very unlikable. But by the end of the novel, you're definitely like you're rooting for this guy. I was like waiting for Robin to leave, and obviously she was not going to leave. I was like, please have a new assistant every book. It'll be like Doctor Who. That didn't happen. Robin is just maybe if I didn't know it was, and we can talk about this later, but maybe if I didn't know it was J.K. Rowling, I wouldn't have disliked her so much. But J.K. Rowling has written some really fantastic female characters, and to me, Robin was just like totally blah. She was like the quote unquote plucky assistant. She was, feisty, whatever. She was like sassy, but she was like nothing else. She was the absolute epitome of like the plucky assistant trope that you do find in a lot of sort of mystery, crime, etc. novels. And I was just like so over it. It's just, I had zero interest in Robin. From the beginning to the end, that didn't change for me. So, yeah.
Maybe it's because I haven't read a lot of novels like this, but I really liked her because I thought that she had a lot of initiative and that she was really clever. And so I didn't really see it as a trope, but then again, it's probably just because I'm not really like super familiar with the genre and what usually goes on in there. But I actually really enjoyed her, and I was really glad by the end that she was going to stay, which I mean, you kind of knew from the beginning that was going to happen, but it was just really neat, I think, how much she ended up helping Strike with all of his investigations.
I guess I was just hoping that there was more to her, and there just wasn't. I mean, I have hope that her character will be more fully developed in the next book, because we know there's going to be a series. Yeah, I just. She was just kind of a nothing character to me, and I understand the purpose of this book was really to give Strike's backstory, so I'm hoping when we get more of Robin's maybe I'll care more about her, or maybe, there'll be another side of her that we haven't seen. But as far as I've seen her characters so far, I just, yeah, it's just nothing as I could do without her. Yay. Positive. What about similarities to other characters? So I have definitely seen people calling Strike Hagrid. I have seen Mad-Eye Moody. Robin, who do people say? I mean, I saw Robin as people have said Hermione, and I was just like, oh hell no. That is Hermione totally wins. Do we see any similarities, or are they their own characters?
I can
I think.
definitely see Mad-Eye Moody as Strike. I think that does make a lot of sense because they have a really gruff kind of personality and stuff. Honestly, while I was reading this, I wasn't thinking about Harry Potter characters at all. I don't know if I was just not really like looking for that or if it just hadn't occurred to me because there was no similarities. The only thing I really noticed was that she always does such a good job with like dialects and accents and the way that she writes the words out, so you know exactly how they're speaking. And that really reminded me of Hagrid and how he talks. But other than that, I honestly didn't really draw any comparisons between the two.
Yeah, I agree. I wasn't going through and being like, oh, this character is like this character. The only thing that, like Karen said, that stood out to me was that she does have this real proclivity. I don't know what to call it for spelling out dialects, which I think I like because it's fun.
Yeah, I think that's great because otherwise, what's the point? Like, there's no point in saying someone has a certain accent if it's not clear in the way that you write it. You may as well have not
Right.
said anything. So that's definitely a hallmark of her writing, I think, and it's great because then you can hear the characters' voices in your head. I always had that with Fleur in Harry Potter. M maybe even more so than Hagrid. I don't know why, but yeah, Fleur. I remember reading hers. In a very terrible French accent in my head, so I'll save you guys from that. Okay, so just while we're talking about the characters, as I mentioned before, there are always these really fantastic side characters, and this novel, like a lot of mystery novels, has, 1,001 minor characters and is set up so, any of them could have done it. We have all of the Bristows, we have Lula, we have, now I think it's Guy some, but I mean, I just have to call him Guy because I just read Guy the entire time I was reading the book. We have all of her friends and like the model friend that Strike gets with and everyone. I always love her descriptions of characters that you're clearly not meant to like. Her descriptions of Tony Landry and some of the other people, like the kind of older men, always the best because they're always described with like eggplant faces and like all these ridiculous things, which always crack me up. Did you guys have any particular characters you liked or you really didn't like?
I
actually thought the women stood out more, like as distinct in the description. I feel like she gets very how do I unforgiving. It's almost like she casts these people in the coldest, like harshest light possible. Almost everyone, I think. Like the mom, Lady Bristow, Rochelle, the descriptions are very like focused on the stuff that they either want to hide or are proud of that are kind of pathetic, and it seemed like the guys to me were just kind of like described almost as the way, I mean, an observant person would see them, but the women were more like, were more insidious, I feel like the description.
I love her characterization because she does such a great job of giving you like just enough detail about their physical appearance that it sticks in your head so you can kind of recognize them later. But then she gives away their mannerisms and stuff and just does such a good job of showing you exactly what kind of person they are without having to tell you. And I think that's the mark of a really good writer. And Guy Somet was by far my favorite character because he was just so full of fire and he was really refreshing in that I felt like above anybody else. He wasn't really trying to hide anything, and I think that he really did care about Lula as much as he said he did. And his personality just really jumped out at me, and I thought he was just such a really fun character. But there were a couple other ones that were interesting. But yeah, I just think she does a really good job of sort of building up these characters in a minimal amount of words, which is kind of a hard thing to do.
Yeah, totally right. That's what I love about her characterizations as well, and you said it in a much nicer way. So, once again, we'll just go with what she said.
I
Yeah,
feel
and
like
Guy as well was like fabulous. And also, I really loved Lula, even though she's dead. Spoiler. She
yeah.
was. I think the way that you kind of had these flashes of what she was like, she sounded super interesting. Like as a character, she was. It was refreshing, I suppose, to have a mystery novel that's based around someone, and it's not just about the fact that that person is dead. It was sort of about who that person was, which doesn't always happen in these kinds of novels. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that part.
I love too that she wasn't perfect. Like even a lot of her friends and the people closest to her, like Guy, they were like, yeah, she was selfish, she was spoiled, she was a brat, but they loved her anyway because she did have nice qualities. And I'm glad that she wasn't built up to be this like super charitable person who did no wrong and who was beautiful and intelligent. Like she was a very real person because of all of her flaws.
Totally. I totally agree. So speaking of Lula, did any of us guess the ending before we got to it? Did anyone have suspicions? I suppose you guys haven't read that many mystery novels, so you maybe don't get how they're usually set up.
I don't read them at all, but I mean I know I mean it occurred to me once or twice like during the novel, I think just 'cause your mind like starts to cast around for anyone that I was like, "Oh, what if the brother did it?" And then I was like, "Well, that's ridiculous because like he went to strike, so that's the stupidest thing that wouldn't happen." At first I was thinking Duffield because everyone was like, "Well, Duffield has an alibi." And then I was like, "There's something weird about that mask." And then toward the end, after Strike slept with Chiara, I don't know how you pronounce it, but I actually really liked her character. And then I was like, wait, I like her too much, and Strike has just had sex with her, so I think there's something here. So I was starting to think that there was something like between her and Duffield and the cute driver that they had kind of orchestrated this somehow, and that that was going to be like some emotional betrayal for Strike that he found out that this girl who he started to like was, you know, involved in the murder. But that was my theory basically until like I don't know from I guess after he slept with her until we kind of found out exactly who it was.
Karen, did you have any ideas?
I had tons of ideas. Were any of
Were
them
any of them
right?
right?
No. I was pretty sure like at one point that every single character had done it. Like every time we saw somebody, I was like, "Oh, you know, they must have done it. They're so shady. They're lying." And I think like near the end, I was definitely thinking it was either what's his face, the rapper guy. I don't even remember his name. Or the driver,
Oh,
Kieran,
DB
I
Mac.
think. Yeah.
He has such a
I
funny
thought
name.
it was either one of those, and because they were both being really shady, and I wasn't really sure what was going on. And it wasn't until basically the confrontation in the office at the end that I was like, oh crap, he totally did it. But I actually have a question about this because I don't know. This kind of came out of left field for me, and I get that the dude was crazy, especially after we learned that he was the one that killed Charlie. But why in the world would he go to Strike, knowing that Strike was going to do his best to figure out what was going on? I mean, I realized that he was probably setting up his uncle or something like that, but did he really think that he was going to get away with it? It just seemed really crazy to me that he would go to Strike when he was the murderer.
No, he was trying to set up the real brother, Jonah, because
Oh, okay.
he saw on the footage and then he worked out that that's who it was, the CCTV. And that's why he kept being like, look at the CCTV, blah, blah, blah. So he was trying to, because he knew that there was a will somewhere that left Jonah all the money. So he was trying to get him like locked up for murder basically. And that way, even if a will came out that left him all the money, like he would be ineligible to get it, and he and John would still get the money that way. And I think they said, you know, like he looked into Strike's backstory and thought, you know, this is a guy I can manipulate or something, because his mother died and his father's like a rock star or, you know, whatever. That was, you know, he thought he could manipulate Strike because he had sort of pegged him as a certain type of guy. I guess a guy that needed money. So yeah, that was the whole point. And also, he's obviously like crazy.
I guess like he's desperate enough too that he would have done something like that. So yeah, it does make sense.
I don't think it was outside of the characterization that she wrote for him. For me, I have read a lot of mystery novels. I love mystery novels. It's never someone that's mentioned like once or twice. So I guess for me, when I was reading it, I knew, well, I assumed it was going to either be the brother, John, or Tony, the uncle, or Duffield, or maybe at a push, the security guard. Yeah. No pun intended. Yeah, like maybe the security guard, because he was in it a lot. So I wasn't, you know, totally surprised when it was the brother. And also, I raced through this book. I read it in, I don't know, like a few hours to get the review up when it first broke that J.K. Rowling was the author. So I didn't have a lot of time to be like, oh, I wonder what's happening in this part of the book. And oh, here are my predictions for what's happening next. But if you guys didn't get it, then that's definitely the mark of a good writer, because basically the aim of a mystery novel is to cast suspicion on everyone to the point where you have no idea, until at the end there's like a big reveal, which we had in this. And let's talk about that really quick, because this is my main issue with Rowling's writing, and I definitely felt it in this. I felt it all the time in Potter, to a smaller extent in The Casual Vacancy, but I think that was just the way that it was written, is she has this kind of, she has a tendency towards the, what I will call an info dump, where she just does pages and pages of exposition, of explanation. In Harry Potter, it was generally like a conversation Harry would have with Dumbledore. And in here it was, you know, the interviews with people, which it's a mystery novel, so, you know, that's kind of a necessity. And then the really big long explanation at the end. So personally, I often find that those are very distracting, because it kind of pulls me out of the novel a bit, because it does feel like, here, I'm just going to tell you a whole lot of information. But I know that's not everyone else's experience. So what did you think?
I think the only time I felt that was at the end, when it was really like, okay, now we're going to tell you who the murderer is. And it seemed like the scene could have been set up in a more creative way than just Strike, like, basically talking to the reader. Other than that, like, I agree that she tends to do that, but I often find them, those info dumps, kind of pleasant, because I think her writing gets really quirky and fun when she can just like race through like information and observation, like more in prose than even in dialogue. So I kind of like, I didn't, especially in Harry Potter, like I know the kind of thing you're talking about, but I usually enjoyed those. And this too, I you know, more or less enjoyed them, not as much as Potter, obviously, but yeah, I mean, I think that they were okay until the end. I agree that the end really kind of stuck out as a, like, did you have a deadline or something, Joe? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I, like, in Potter, I didn't honestly notice info dumps. I think it's just because I didn't really care, because I was so invested in the characters and finding out what was going on that it just really didn't jump out at me. I didn't mind the interviews in this book so much, because there was a lot of back and forth, and I thought that it was sort of a dynamic conversation, so that didn't bother me all too much. But yeah, I definitely noticed it at the end, and the whole big reveal when he just goes on for pages and pages explaining to the killer how he killed his sister and what was going on. It's like, we needed that information but there must be a better way to get it across. And I get that, like, she was trying to save all the information for the end, for the reveal for the audience, but it was so obvious that that's exactly what was going on that it just seemed really implausible to me that the killer would be sitting there letting him explain to him how he got away with everything.
Okay, so let me do a quick rundown for all the people that are currently yelling at their iPods for you guys. So basically, in a mystery novel, what will happen, and this is essentially, this is every single mystery novel ever written, every mystery thing adapted or put on TV. There will be, you know, all through the book, little clues will be happening, someone will have died, there'll be someone kind of, whether it's a detective or whoever, who's kind of following up on the case, and there'll be lots of red herrings, etc. And at the end of it, that person that's the detective will, in some cases, gather all the people together that could be suspects in the eyes of the audience, I suppose, and will explain to them in like a big long speech, oh, you could have been the murderer for these reasons. Oh, jokes, you weren't actually the murderer. But you could have been the murderer for these reasons. No, jokes, you weren't actually the murderer. You could have been the murderer. Yeah, he was the murderer. Everyone, this guy, he was the murderer. Like, in front of everyone. And then sometimes they do it the way that she did it, which is they get the murderer alone so that the audience doesn't think it's the murderer. They, like, introduce them in a way that, you know, you read the character's thoughts or whatever, and you think, like, oh, okay, they're just going to have a conversation. And then it immediately gets turned on its head, and they do this big reveal thing. So this is fairly common in mystery novels, and maybe that's why the end one didn't bother me so much as all of the interviews that he did throughout the book, because, oh, controversial. Regardless of it being J.K. Rowling, to me, the info dump is just lazy writing, because there's always another way to do it. And yeah, that's it. Always, it just pulls me out of it. So, but let's move on before people, you know, hate. Get, you guys know the drill for hate mail. It's all good.
Well, no, I mean, I also feel like through the book, and maybe this is a trope as well. But like at a certain point after Strike could figure it out, he kept being like, "There's a multiple murderer out there," and it's like, "Well, why don't you tell us who it is?" And it's like, because then the book would end right here. And it was like really clear to me a couple of times that like Strike knew what was going on, but was not telling, because that would tip off the audience.
Right.
And that started getting really frustrating to me, especially because I did feel the book was a teeny bit too long, and also I in general, like, I really did feel my thing that I usually feel with mysteries. It's like, oh my god, for crap's sake, just tell me who did it. And, I mean, on the one hand, that's a good thing, because that means that the mystery is compelling. But on the other hand, I was like, but if he knows, then we should know. Because we are more or less in his head, and it's not like, obviously it's not first person, but we are privy to a lot of what Strike knows. For god's sake, we know when he goes to the bathroom. Like, can't we know this?
Sure, but I mean, not to bring it back to Potter all the time, but the easy parallel to draw would be when Harry and Voldemort have the showdown in Deathly Hallows, and we think we know what the flaw in the plan was until Harry says, you know, the flaw in the plan was I overpowered Draco ages ago. And we're basically in Harry's head that entire time, but she holds it back for the reveal for the reader. And yeah, you're right. That's pretty standard in mystery novels. Karen, what did you think of the pacing?
It was, yeah, I think the book was a little long, but I also felt like a lot of the information that we got in there was relevant and necessary. I feel that the book did a really, really excellent job of making it very real and making it, like, not super convenient how he got all of this information, that it didn't happen within a day or two, it happened over several weeks, and that he had to go to interviews, and he was being pushed off by certain people, and it felt very real to me, but at the same time, I do kind of wish that it had been condensed a little bit.
Haha, you said pushed off.
Oh, dang.
I will say
too funny.
The reveal at the end did kind of remind me of Prisoner of Azkaban, when like the whole thing's getting explained and like you have all these preconceptions that are getting torn down. But in that case, and I guess that also is an info dump, but in that case, like you care so much, and for the whole book you've been so convinced that what Harry knows is right and that none of this could possibly be true, that like when all that information gets torn down piece by piece, it's really fascinating. And this was just like, oh, John Bristow did it, you know, like it wasn't as emotionally compelling. It was like kind of horrifying and like fascinating, but the answer was sort of just like, well, he's crazy and really wants money. So that wasn't exactly like I didn't feel that much, you know?
Yeah, no, yeah, I think
I agree.
That makes sense. I mean, you've only had one book with these characters, so, and it's a very different type of story. So I sort of wouldn't expect you to have the emotional involvement in this that you would have in something like Potter. But let's right. push let's, on, let's, ha ha ha, because there are lots of things to talk about still, and I want to talk a little bit more about sort of Rowling's work in general. So I think that's basically it for sort of plot and character. Just a couple of the actual issues that were in the book. I think there were definitely two ones that stuck out to me. They were her portrayals of the media, which was very negative. And I suppose tied in with that were her portrayals of sort of the class issues and divisions, which we see very clearly with, you know, John Bristow and Lula versus Strike and, you know, Robin in some sense sort of being the middle ground there. And we have this idea that, you know, Strike is, everyone thinks Strike will be really rich and blah, 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 because he has a famous dad, but he's, you know, living hand to mouth and sleeping in his office and etc. So class divisions, let's talk about really quick. Did that stick out to anyone else, or was that just me?
I'm actually going to disagree with you. I mean, I think that was there, but I thought race was much more of a heavy issue in the book. I feel like almost every character we got their views on race, whether intentionally or unintentionally, like everyone Strike interviewed was defined somehow by either their ethnicity or their history, you know, with other people of other races, or like, you know, I mean, like everyone from like Tony Landry to Guy to Lula's birth mom, everyone was talking about race. And so to me, that was sort of like at a certain point, I was actually wondering if it was like a tell on her part, like the people who were racist were like the bad guys, because you had like Tony Landry and you had the mom and whatever. But I don't know. What did you guys think of that? Like, I thought class was definitely there, but for me, race stood out more.
I saw race in that. I mean, race was obviously very overtly mentioned, but when I read it, my reading was more, yes, some of them sort of talked about, I read it a while ago, but to my memory, I can't remember every single conversation being sort of centered around it. But in my memory, they were, at least her descriptions of them and things were very much based around their relationship with money and people either wanting money or needing money or demanding money because they thought that would buy them into, you know, a particular class, and obviously the issues that brought with them. But, you know, I think, yeah, race was definitely there as well. Karen, what do you think?
I think both of them were there in pretty equal proportions, but the class issue, I think, was at the forefront more often. That seemed to be more of a reason, well, obviously behind the murders and everything, but both of them were there. They both really stuck out to me, and I thought it was interesting the way that she handled them, because it was pretty realistic, I think, for, you know, what people think about that sort of thing. But it was also, it was really sad to see some of the people that didn't have a lot of money and how they were living and their thoughts, and even the people that had money and what they thought of people that didn't. It was just, it was really realistic portrayal, I think.
Yeah, and like I said, the other one that sort of stuck out to me was the way that she portrayed the media. I mean, we open up with that, how the news is traveling fast of this dead supermodel in the street, basically. And she doesn't seem overly fond of the media. I think that's fairly safe to say. Did everyone else, would you agree with that assessment?
This is the one thing that stuck out to me above everything else, I think. I honestly felt like this was J.K. Rowling talking to the media through her book, and just, she just really painted a horrible picture of them. And we didn't really get any, like, very individual characters in the media. They were just sort of this collective of the paparazzi that would follow these people around and take pictures of them and didn't really care about them as people at all, which is very truthful, but I definitely saw it as her pointing the finger at them and being like, listen, you guys are ridiculous. This is what it's really like. Because let's face it, she knows. She knows all about media and the things that they've done to try to contact her as well.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, that's tied into the class thing as well, you know, with these people's like images being worth money, and you know, Duffield walking out in a wolf mask, meaning that they won't get their paycheck because you don't have the exact collection of pixels that are Evan Duffield's face, you know. And it is really fascinating, and it's kind of sad and scary. I did think it was a little easy. In terms of like, I mean, we all know, like, we not know, but are aware that paparazzi are horrible, and it's sad that the way they act. But at the same time, I mean, it's a perfectly valid subject, especially in a book about fame. And you know, like the line that the paparazzi chased Lula out that window was very, I mean, it didn't turn out to be true, but it was very powerful.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Okay, I think that basically wraps up our Cuckoo's Calling discussion. I'm sure you guys have lots of feedback and lots of things you wish that we talked about, but that's cool. Make sure you continue the discussion in the comments for the post for this podcast, and you can always tweet us. We love replying to whatever, and you know, we can go on forever and clog up your Twitter feed if that's what you want. So, we've got a f there's a couple more questions I wanted to talk about this, but before we do, let's read some fan reviews because some of you let us know what you were thinking about it. Overall, I would say fans have been, well, fans, listeners is what I'm trying to say. Fans of the book have been very, very positive about it. And I imagine this is mainly a kind of Potter audience that has moved on to this. Maybe it's because Casual Vacancy was not so well received. But we have a tweet here from Laura who said, loved it, engaging and interesting, great characters, and looking forward to the next one. So that's always a good sign. Karen, did you want to read that next one?
Sure. This is from Lucy, and she says, finished it a month ago, huge murder mystery fan, so it was right up my alley, but I solved the crime in the first 20 pages. Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, I guess if you're a huge murder mystery fan, maybe it was a little bit obvious, but it definitely took me by surprise.
Yeah, I think Lucy outsmarted all of us. And Mikhail, did you want to grab that last one?
Jer said, I'm in the middle of it and I'm not the biggest mystery fan, but I'm loving it.
Like positive reviews all around.
Yeah, and I know Laura from Hypable also really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and she's a really big like English crime mystery fan as well, I know. So that is probably saying something. And I know Laura listened to the audiobook as well and really loved that. So if you know, you don't want to use your Audible credit on whatever that was, I can't remember. Ray Carson. If you don't want to let's
The
try that
Girl of
again.
Fire and Thorns.
Sorry. It just matches in my head with like whatever, Game of Thrones. I don't know. Selling. There's a block happening there. If you don't want to use it on that, you can always check out The Cuckoo's Calling and you'll be able to hear all those fun dialects read out for you. So you won't have to imagine them or read them in your head in terrible accents like I do. So let's do some more general questions. And this is something I'm super interested in because I feel like there's this big debate amongst like Rowling slash Potter fans about whether we can compare this to Potter or whether that's like sacrilege or, you know, whatever. So where do you think this ranks against her other books? So we have, you know, all the Potter books and the extra ones, and we have Casual Vacancy. And do you think it's okay to compare them?
I think it's okay to compare them. It's not something I'm personally really interested in.
I think, like, as far as ranking them goes, Harry Potter's definitely first. I would say this is second, and the Casual Vacancy is third. I actually enjoyed the Casual Vacancy a lot more than I think a lot of other people did, but it was very hard to get through, and I would definitely say that one comes last. But I think it's totally fine to compare the books. I think that when you're talking about different genres and stuff, it's going to be hard, especially with something like Harry Potter, which is a long series and is very intricate and is so well loved among fans. But it's by the same author, and I think that if it was anyone except J.K. Rowling, people wouldn't necessarily have such a problem comparing the books. And so I think that you have to give a little wiggle room for the difference in the subject and everything, but I think it's fine to kind of stack it up against Harry Potter, but at the same time, you have to know that it's going to be very different because it's an adult novel about, a crime instead of kind of a children's fantasy book.
Totally. I think you're completely right about it being J.K. Rowling. I don't think people would have an issue if it was another author. Personally, I always compare, I guess maybe subconsciously, authors' works to their previous stuff because in my mind it's just like a constant development. And I can't help it. I just think back of like the other things that I've read of theirs. So when I read The Cuckoo's Calling, I couldn't help but compare it to her other works, and I definitely noticed some similarities between them. But I also think that Potter and Cuckoo's Calling are not as different as maybe people would think, because essentially, to me, Harry Potter is not a fantasy series, not a children's book, it is a mystery. And every book is kind of set up with this mystery, and Harry is solving the mystery, and of course, there are lots of other things going on, but that was sort of how I read it, and I think that is definitely her strength. And I didn't dislike The Casual Vacancy. It wasn't like my favorite book that I'd ever read, but it didn't have that kind of mystery feel to it. And I think she is really great at that. She's really good at like the twists and the turns and all the different things. And, info dumps aside, she gives you always a really good reveal at the end. So I would go with your order, Karen, as well. Like Potter and then Cuckoo's Calling and then Casual Vacancy. But what did you guys think? Did you see similarities between Cuckoo's Calling and her other books? I know when I read it, I definitely did, and I talked about this a bit in my review on Hypeable. But what did you think? Because obviously, it's her going in, but did you see similarities, or were they totally different for you?
I saw some similarities. She uses too many semicolons. It drives me nuts, but just throwing that out there
Oh, you can so
again.
tell that you're an editor.
There's no such thing as too many semicolons.
Oh, yes, there is. You're only supposed to use them once every 100 pages, maybe. But she went overboard. And I'm not saying that they were wrong or anything, but holy cow, it was really distracting. What was the actual question you were asking? Sorry.
Similarities.
Similarities.
Similarities in writing.
Right. Yeah, I think that because, if I had read this book without knowing it was her, I don't think I would have guessed, just because, who would have guessed that J.K. Rowling would have written under a pseudonym and then be this book and all that stuff. So I can't really say I would have guessed it without knowing. But looking at it now, I actually did see a lot of similarities between this book and The Casual Vacancy and sort of her format and the way that she wrote things and her styling. So I think that it was a lot more readable than The Casual Vacancy, but there was definitely hints of that other book in this one.
Yeah, my sister actually made a similar observation, which is that, and I agree, I don't know if it would have been clear that it was the same author going into this from Potter, but going into this from The Casual Vacancy, with her observations of adults, with her kind of the way she approaches, I guess, people when she isn't writing in a friendlier world that Harry Potter is. I think there's a lot of similarities there. And something I actually missed was I kind of said while I was reading this book, I want her to write genuinely nice people again. I miss that,
Yeah.
obviously, Harry has a ton of flaws and sometimes you hate him, but you adore him at the end of the day. And almost all the characters in Harry Potter you do. And I don't know if that's I don't know the reasoning and I don't want to guess it, but there's a lot of things about Strike that make me uncomfortable as much as I like him. And I just want a really nice person again from her, from I don't know.
I think I'm a reader that when I maybe this is why I didn't hate The Casual Vacancy so much, but I really don't see her style as being so dissimilar. I think you're right about sort of the quote-unquote niceness of the characters, but everything else, it was like I could see very distinct similarities between Potter and Casual Vacancy. And then again with this, I probably wouldn't have known it was J.K. Rowling if I had just read it, because why would you think that? But as soon as I knew it was her, I could pick out the things as I was going through it, like the character descriptions for one, the focus on the dialogue, and the way that she sort of turns a phrase. In some ways, like you read through it and you think like, oh, so, you know, it reads like something that you would read in Harry Potter. But yeah, for me, definitely it's always the characters that stick out. She has a very distinct way of characterization, like we talked about before. So yeah, I think they're quite easily linked together. Like, to me, she has a very distinct writing style, and I don't know if she's trying to shake that by being quote-unquote adult books or whatever, but it's like it's very similar to me.
Did you guys, the scene where Strike is supposed to meet with Bristow, but Tony Landry comes instead, and like that whole scene is basically like a takedown of Tony Landry. I found that immensely enjoyable and very reminiscent of, I can't even put my finger on anything exactly, but I have this idea of like Harry getting the best of Umbridge, you know, like something that like, just kind of by being subtle and snarky, the character manages to, like, unnerve the asshole in the room.
Yeah, I think it's McGonagall getting the best of Umbridge.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. I think regardless of what she's writing, there are some things that just sort of shine through with her writing. And, I mean, if nothing else, the info dumps. But
I think
what can you do?
Dumbledore did that a lot too, kind of killing people with kindness. He sort of, you know, put them on edge without actually calling them out on anything. But I really enjoyed that scene between Strike and Landry. I thought that it was really cool how subtly he got under his skin.
And then Landry turns out to be like misunderstood, and I was like, what the hell?
This entire book is like just the Dursleys. So is Casual Vacancy. It was just entire book about like the Dursleys and their extended family. But I mean, we should really stop talking about Harry Potter because, well, I was going to say there's a podcast for that, but I don't think there is anymore. So guys, we could fill a void.
True.
That made me so sad. I mean, I haven't listened to MuggleCast in years, but it was sad to see.
Yeah.
Even though it's probably time.
Oh, anyway. Wow. That is basically it. I wanted to ask you guys how well you thought this fit into the English crime and mystery genre, but you really haven't read any. So let me do a quick recommendation. If people enjoyed this, there's P.D. James has written a lot of, like, is another British mystery writer. Elizabeth George is kind of one of the, you know, that people always call out, one of the greatest detective novel writers, and of course Agatha Christie is fantastic, and I adore Agatha Christie. I have read like every single one of her books, so she would definitely be my pick. You have what?
I have one of her books. I've had it literally for probably more literally than 10 years. I was just gonna say, I was like, I just said literally.
I don't know whether to title this episode literally or at a push.
definitely at a push.
You should read it. Which one is it?
Oh, I think it's something to do with a funeral.
Okay, well, that's like every single book, so.
But, like, funeral is in the title.
Was there arsenic?
I mean, I haven't read it. I have no idea.
You should read it. Is it after the funeral? I think I have that one. That's a Poirot. You should read that. That is really good. And you know what you'll like is they are a whole lot shorter than this was. Like, they get to the point a lot faster, but it's very similar in sort of structure. So yeah, I would definitely recommend Agatha Christie if people enjoy this and want to check out some other English crime. They're very English. They're like hysterically English in some cases because they're all set in like the 1940s, 1950s, or like 1920s in some cases. Yeah, it's great.
I read a collection of short stories of hers in high school, and like the answer at the end was literally arsenic every time. So that every time I think of Agatha Christie, I think arsenic.
No, incorrect. No. Although a lot of the time, true, but not all the time. So, quick questions. This is going to be a series. We know that the sequel is probably going to hit shelves in summer of 2014. Will you guys read it? Yes or no?
Yes.
No.
Depends what I hear about it.
Oh, you really one word one word answers. So, Karen, do you think we don't know how many there's going to be, but it's definitely going to be a series. So, do you think you would keep going with them?
Yeah, I think just on the fact that it's J.K. Rowling, I kind of feel this obligation to read them, which kind of doesn't sound very good, but I definitely didn't dislike the book, so I am interested in finding out more about the characters.
And there's been talk of a film adaptation. Would we watch a film adaptation of this?
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, maybe.
You're
No.
terrible.
I don't know. I just, the love is not there. Like I enjoyed the book, didn't hate it, but like I just, I don't know. I'm not like part of me thinks like, oh yeah, I kind of do want to know what happened to Robin and Strike, but then I think, well, I could just Wikipedia that.
Well, that is, aren't you meant to be a Game of Thrones fan? Like, aren't they really anti-Wikipedia? Isn't that like the most terrible
I
thing that
read
you could
Game of
do?
Thrones in 2004,
Oh my
so
God,
I
I'm such a hipster.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
you're the
Yes.
hipster.
In terms of Game of Thrones, I am a hipster, and it's called A Song of Ice and Fire, by the way.
I didn't say I was talking about the series. I could have been talking about the first book. You don't know.
Well, then it's a Game of Thrones, not Game of Thrones.
Oh no, in Australia it's a different edition. Okay, so
Hipster glasses.
yeah, moving on. So that's all we have for Cuckoo's Calling. Although I feel like I need to justify my really terrible review now, which was basically everything that we talked about in this episode, except like Mikhail just said, this is just not a book I can get crazily excited about. No matter how good it is, it's just not a book that I'm ever going to be like super passionate and telling everyone to read, because it's just a good mystery novel at the end of the day. And there are hundreds of thousands of mystery novels, some better than others. So, that's fine. I mean, I love Agatha Christie, but if I read an Agatha Christie book, I would not be like, A plus, this is the best book I've ever read, because it's just not that good. It's fine, and then you probably don't think about it ever again. So I would read the next one, and then I would promptly forget everything that happened, except if Robin does not improve, then I'll probably be mad about it. So hope you
Oh, I have a
hope.
question for you guys. Do you think that Robin is going to break up with her boyfriend slash fiance, who sounds like an asshole?
I think so.
Do you think she's going to get with Strike?
I really hope not. If she gets with Strike, I quit these books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Like, I think that her and Matthew are kind of headed down that road, but I really don't see her with somebody like Strike. And I think if they have more of a platonic relationship, it's going to be a lot more interesting and a lot more rewarding. So I hope that they don't get together.
Yeah. He did buy her that dress, though. Can't you
Oh,
just see it?
that was the
Her walking
worst.
into the restaurant on their first date wearing that dress, and she'll be like, remember? I don't know. This is not gonna happen. I'm
Are
just
you
saying.
writing Cuckoo's Calling fan fiction right now? Is that what's happening?
Yes.
Do you think that
Name give me
exists?
in the next battleships, Robin and Strike.
How do you think that Cuckoo's Calling Harry Potter crossover fan fiction exists yet?
I
Oh
think
my
it
God.
will. Finding out about the Wizarding World. Oh my God.
Oh,
That would be
yeah.
amazing.
Oh, yeah, that would be really cool. Wait a second. I have to know if this exists or not. I'm
Okay.
researching.
Rochelle's coat, her fuzzy Muppet coat was actually a cloak, but there was like the mist was on it from Percy Jackson, and yeah.
Yeah, I don't get
She
Percy
doesn't get
Jackson
that reference.
references.
Oh, okay. Well, it only looked like a fuzzy Muppet coat to Muggles, but to everyone else it looked like a cloak to
Perfect. That sounds brilliant. On that note, this has been Book Hype. You can find us on hyperball.com. You can leave us comments on the post for this podcast. You can read lots of book news over there and leave us comments on any of the book posts. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at Book Hype. We are always asking lots of fun questions and linking to lots of ridiculous YouTube videos, that second one is mainly me. And
I need to
complaining
get on there more.
Hmm?
I need to get on there.
Yeah, well, Karen has been complaining about the Australian promotions that we have been seeing on Book Hype. That's probably
it's just
my fault.
So funny. Like, I got on the one day and it was like something about all these Australians are losing their jobs. Like, support us now or whatever. And I'm like, okay, Merrim has been on too much.
Merrim's tweeting drunk again. God.
I make zero apologies. So we'll see you guys next time. We don't know what our next book club book will be, but if you have a suggestion, feel free to leave it in the comments or tweet at us. And who knows, maybe we'll do one of those time warp book clubs with a book that came out ages and ages and ages ago. Maybe we'll do a Harry Potter one so that we can actually talk about it without pretending that it's a Cuckoo's Calling discussion. So I'm Marima.
I'm Michal.
And I'm Karen.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.